I have a 75-year-old patient, and we took her through the food sensitivity testing and changed her diet. And she realized that she had stopped her morning walks because her knee was hurting so badly. But when she changed her diet, she was able to resume her walks without pain until she slipped up and ate something she shouldn't have eaten, and then her knee would hurt again.
Cue music. Places, everybody, places. We're starting in 3, 2.
Welcome to the Autoimmune Hour, where we look at the rise of autoimmune disorders. I've brought together top experts that range from doctors, specialists, nutritionists, researchers, and even those recovering from autoimmune to bring you the latest, most up-to-date information about autoimmunity and how to live your life uninterrupted.
Thank you for joining us here on the Autoimmune Hour with Sharon Saylor. Now, we don't want you to worry about taking too many notes, so you can join the Autoimmune Hour's Courage Club, and we'll send you the transcripts and show notes from every episode. Sign up now at understandingautoimmune.com. Now, back to your host, Sharon Saylor.
Welcome, everyone, to the Autoimmune Hour, Surviving to Thriving with Sharon Saylor. And it's, oh, my honor to be with you here for another brand new episode of the Autoimmune Hour. And I'm always so excited with the wonderful people I meet. And one thing, we're, maybe all close to 190 episodes already, almost 4 years out in the show. And I'll tell you, the momentum is gaining all thanks to you, my beautiful Autoimmune Hour community. And I am meeting the most amazing people. And when I first started, you know, I had to work really hard to find guests and all of that. But now it's so awesome. You guys keep suggesting the most fantastic people for me to meet. And that's exactly what happened with our guest tonight. You'll remember a couple of weeks ago, we had Adam Markle on, and he said, you've got to meet Elizabeth Yarnell. And he was so right. So that's what I love. And here's a little bit about Elizabeth. She's on a mission to improve lives simply by changing the way we think about food. And as you guys have been listening for a while, you know that food was one of the reasons I say that I am a thriver now, is understanding the quality of food we put in our mouth and how it affects how we feel and our health. And in 1999, she was diagnosed with multiple sclerosis, and that forced her to rethink everything she thought she knew about her health and inspired the now patented invention for a quick and easy method of cooking whole foods that she introduced in her 2009 best-selling cookbook, Glorious One Pot Meals, a revolutionary new quick and healthy approach to Dutch oven cooking. And she has this unique approach to cooking that allows you to cook quickly and easily. And what busy family doesn't love that, right? Can you believe in 2019 will be the 10th anniversary? So that's just right around the corner, Elizabeth. Thanks for being on the show.
Oh, I'm so excited to be here today. Thanks for bringing me on, Sharon.
Oh, absolutely. And anybody that knows the story of my recovery from dermatomyositis knows that I say understanding food, diet, and how it affects my body is critically important. And one of the things I wanted to talk to you about was this idea of sometimes people will come up with just generic things like you shouldn't eat this or you shouldn't eat that. But I have found it's really more about your body and how your body reacts. Can you talk a little bit about sort of these global food things, and maybe that's not always the best for your individual body?
I'm so glad you brought that up, because really everything I do is very individualized. And I wish I could write a book that said everybody with MS or everybody with an autoimmune disease should follow this diet. But what I find in my practice is that it is as unique as a fingerprint for each person. In fact, I've even tested twins and they came out complete polar opposites in what foods cause inflammation for each of them. So what I do in my practice as a naturopath, I run a nationwide food sensitivities clinic, and we use a food sensitivities test, which is really the gold standard of food sensitivity testing, called the mediator release test. And that test looks at 170 foods and chemicals and other additives that are in our food supply and gives us really a very clear indication of which ones are inflammation causing and which ones are not inflammation causing for that person. So it can be incredibly random. For myself, for example, one of my most inflammatory foods is lettuce.
Lettuce.
Lettuce. Who would think lettuce could be inflammatory? But I can eat lettuce and I can trigger an MS exacerbation in myself simply by eating lettuce. How would I have ever figured that out without this test? There's no way possible.
With lettuce is you usually eat it with other things. It's like, you know, in a salad, you've got everything from tomatoes to cucumber or on a hamburger, you got lettuce and all those other things. I could see how you struggle to like, okay, something in that meal triggered
me. Maybe. So food sensitivities can take up to 4 days to manifest as inflammation, as symptoms of inflammation in the body. So if you even just think about everything you've eaten, let's just say yesterday, you probably ate at least 30 different types of foods and ingredients yesterday. Let's just say you had that salad. So in that salad, there was lettuce, there was tomatoes, there were green peppers, there were cucumbers, and then there was the salad dressing, which had 5 ingredients in it. And then maybe you had some croutons. So that's just one part of everything that you ate yesterday. But now today, you're having trouble with your balance, or you are having other symptoms. Like for me, I tend to sometimes get hives, or I have problems with my vision. For me to pinpoint the one ingredient of all those things I ate in the last 4 days, absolutely impossible. But that's where this food sensitivity testing and the dietary therapy that I take my patients through afterwards with the results, using those results of that food sensitivity testing, that's where it makes such a huge difference, because it really enables us to identify exactly what the culprits are that are causing that inflammation. And as I know that you know, Sharon, because I've listened to your past episodes, all symptoms are inflammation based. A symptom is just the manifestation of inflammation. And what I believe is that really where that inflammation manifests is less important than the fact that there is inflammation in the body. So in my practice, my goal is to remove the inflammation from that person's body by designing a customized anti-inflammatory diet, and also looking at everything else in their world that might contain ingredients that are inflammatory for them. I, for instance, worked with one patient. She had multiple sclerosis, and one of her big symptoms was she had shoulder pain often. So her doctor prescribed her this pain relieving cream, and she would rub this cream on 6-7 times a day because she was just in agony from this pain. And when we did her food sensitivity testing, we found out that one of her most inflammatory ingredients was blue food dye. Turned out the cream was blue.
Oh my gosh. That's the problem with hidden things. I have a garbanzo beans affect me. Now, you know, in a hummus, you're going, okay, that's obvious. But that garbanzo bean protein is hidden just like blue food dye. Well, I guess blue food dye is not hidden. It's rather obvious that it's blue.
But it's everywhere, right?
Yeah.
Right. So the proteins in beans and legumes are called lectins. And some people are very lectin intolerant. But it might be that you're sensitive to garbanzo beans, but you can handle kidney beans.
You can handle all beans but garbanzo beans.
Exactly.
That's what's so frustrating with these global problems, when you get these global diets like no dairy, no beans, no lectins, no nightshade, whatever. You know, so many people are like taking entire food groups out of their possibilities. And then pretty soon you're left with a handful of maybe 5 items that you can eat.
It's true.
I've always worried that can't be healthy.
I completely agree with you. We need, first of all, I hate breaking foods down into large categories like proteins and carbs and sugars, because a whole food contains a lot of different things. And I really, at the foundation, I think whole foods are better than processed foods. And anytime you pull out a piece of a food, then you're looking, it's a processing application. And so I like to look at whole foods rather than those individual parts. But you're absolutely right. I think that if you remove entire food groups from your body, you are not helping your body achieve health in any way, shape, or form.
Yeah, so I just always felt like if you're wholesale saying no, something like this, like we'll say no nightshades, you're eliminating a lot of vegetables. And that's always seems to me not to be very rational. Let's talk some things about, okay, we can do the food sensitivity test. Is that a blood test? What does the test entail?
It is a blood test. It's called the MRT, the mediated release test. And it is really the gold standard in food sensitivity testing. So most food sensitivity tests or food allergy tests look for antibody creation, but that can be unreliable. Sometimes you create the antibodies and then you don't have symptoms, which is what they're supposed to do. Sometimes you create the antibodies, but then you do have symptoms. And sometimes you don't have any antibodies, but you still have symptoms. And so it can really be, I think, a waste of time very much to do that kind of antibody testing, looking for food sensitivities and dietary changes. The mediated release test looks for type 4 hypersensitivity reactions. So these don't create antibodies, but they do cause the white blood cells to start the inflammatory process in the body. They cause inflammation wherever the bloodstream goes. So that inflammation, where, as I said before, where it manifests is less important than the fact that there's inflammation. Now, before I move on, I want to say that anytime there's inflammation in the body, there's inflammation in the digestive tract. So if you have inflammation, let's say you have migraines, you probably have leaky gut too. So all of that goes together. But with the mediated release test, we're able to see which foods cause your bloodstream to release the mediators and to what extent. We get back a really nice bar chart that says this one is releases a lot of mediators and this one releases very few. And that way we can design your customized anti-inflammatory diet focusing on the ones that don't release, don't cause your bloodstream to release the mediators. So they're anti-inflammatory for you. They don't cause the inflammation to happen.
A quick question about that. I had a skin test for different food sensitivities. And then I later learned that the problem with, one of the problems with that was like, I had been avoiding certain foods for a long period of time. And since I had been avoiding them, my body was very slow to react to them or in that, this particular test that I took. And does this other test that you're talking about take that into account, that sometimes when we've been told to avoid certain whole food groups, we've been doing it for quite a while and the body may not react as fast to it as it may perhaps it used to?
Antibodies need to have that familiarity to, so you had to have ingested them fairly recently within a, probably either months or years. But mediators do not. For instance, when I tested my son and he was 6 years old, he came up very, very reactive, red reactive to coffee, but he had never had coffee before. So, and I have a lot of patients, we test them, maybe they come up high to venison. Maybe they've never had venison before. It doesn't matter if you've had any exposure to it at all. So we don't ask you to re-expose yourself before testing.
Oh, that's great to know, because oftentimes, like I said, now generically we're told to avoid groups, and we can be doing that. I've been avoiding dairy for years and that's just a wholesale thing, although I did find that I don't react to sheep dairy. So I've been enjoying some sheep kefir and cheese, which is nice to add it back into the diet. It doesn't seem to react at all. That's where I got into this idea of this wholesale dismissing of very important food groups or very important opportunities to have a wider variety of food in our diet.
I agree. I have a lot of patients who come to me and they're on, somebody has recommended to them, maybe another nutritionist, that they do go paleo or an Atkins or some other kind of fad, what I consider a fad dietary practice. And when I test them, for instance, I had a 15-year-old who had MS and she was going downhill so far that she had dropped out of high school. And she was really suffering, and her doctor had suggested a paleo diet. And when we tested her, we found that that was actually the exact opposite of what she should have done. And we basically put her almost on a meat-free diet. There was only one meat, I think it was turkey, that she could tolerate without inflammation. And we introduced a bunch of grains. It was amazing. Within 2 months, she was back in high school. She graduated valedictorian. It was just fantastic to watch. And I see that all the time with my patients once we identify what the real culprits are for their inflammation.
Wow. And you touched on leaky gut. And now I know up until just, I want to say maybe a couple of years ago, I would mention that to my traditional doctors. And one of my gastroenterologists just rolled his eyes. Like, you know, oh, you know, stop that, that was a fad to them. Now, maybe the terminology was a fad, but I've since learned that, you know, that term leaky gut is sort of a newer name for it. But let's talk a little bit about leaky gut and ways that we can actually harm our gut that might have gotten us here.
So, yeah, so leaky gut is, if you go by the scientific name, intestinal permeability. your doctor might.
Thank you. That was it.
And that a little bit better. But you're right, because in medical schools, they weren't teaching anything about intestinal permeability. And in fact, they weren't really studying, even the GI docs weren't really studying the ways that food was causing inflammation in the GI tract and the rest of the body. In fact, Dr. Alessio Fasano, I don't know if you've heard of him, but he's basically the father of celiac disease. And when he and his team, I think they were at that point out of the University of Maryland, discovered that celiac disease was being caused by wheat, they were basically laughed off the stage at the medical conferences when they presented, because medical doctors in our Western world had never considered that maybe food had any impact on health. And in fact, even today, they very rarely have any nutritional classes or coursework in their medical studies. So a medical doctor isn't really the best person to talk to about leaky gut. But leaky gut really happens when there's chronic inflammation in the body, and that inflammation is sparked off by the white blood cells, and they release a whole bunch of other cells that causes inflammation, and it goes everywhere the bloodstream goes, and especially the digestive tract, but not only there, but everywhere the bloodstream goes. So you might feel that if you have inflammation in your body, you might feel a little foggy headed, like a hangover, or you might feel that your fingers might be swollen, or your rings are having a hard time coming off, or maybe you're having swelling in your feet. It doesn't matter where it's manifesting, because anytime you have inflammation in your body, it is also in the digestive tract.
Just a side note on that was to be aware that it isn't always throughout your whole body. When I get exposed to a certain food product, I notice it in my hips, and that's it. And I'm at first, when it started happening, it's like, what did I do too hard to hurt my hips? But then just by sheer chance, I realized what was causing the hip pain. And once when I stay away from that food, the hip pain is gone. So just a little side note for the community, that it doesn't have to be overall achiness. As you said, it could be a migraine or a shoulder pain.
Exactly.
It could be almost anything, which is hard to pinpoint, because you're like, is this inflammation or did I overdo my shoulder stretches that day?
I have a 75-year-old patient, and we took her through the food sensitivity testing and changed her diet. And she realized that she had stopped her morning walks because her knee was hurting so badly. But when she changed her diet, she was able to resume her walks without pain until she slipped up and ate something she shouldn't have eaten. And then her knee would hurt again. So, yes.
Yeah, I consider that confirmation that you're on the right track.
Exactly.
The nice thing is that inflammation will go away once you stop the inflammatory insult to your body.
Right. And if you can get yourself down to a baseline where you're not running around life mostly inflamed, then you will notice. So if you're like a normal person, or let's say a normal person diagnosed with an autoimmune disease or other kinds of chronic distress, they're probably walking around 80% inflamed all the time. So when you trigger more inflammation, say by eating a tomato or whatever, or for me, eating lettuce, you might not really notice it because you're always feeling kind of crappy. But if you bring that inflammation down and now you're like at 10% inflammation at a normal, on a day-to-day level, and then you eat that inflammatory thing like the lettuce for me, and then you shoot up to 90%, you notice.
Yeah, that's so true. That's what happened to me too. Once I started doing this about 2 years ago, getting into the idea that food has a huge effect on our body, it was Dr. Perlmutter who explained to me that not only, you know, medications that we're told to take cause a chemical soup. He said, just think of your body as this big old soup pot and you're putting chemicals in it. Whether it's lettuce that breaks down into chemicals in your body, or a prescription drug for your autoimmune condition. So he says, it's just changing the composition of this great big old chemical soup. And that made so much sense to me when someone's broken down like food is just chemicals and different products that your body uses, but it breaks it down. It's not like lettuce just going right down through your system. And I went, makes so much more sense to me.
And as somebody like yourself who's been avoiding dairy for a long time, you may have noticed before, when you used to eat dairy, maybe you could handle maybe a piece of cheese, but if it was melted, which is a chemical reaction, it might have been worse.
Wow, really? That expand on that. Okay.
Right. So when I first discovered that I was lactose intolerant way back in college, I had been eating cheese and dairy products. And I hadn't really been thinking about it, but when I would have something like pizza with that melted cheese, all of a sudden all hell would break loose and it would be so much worse.
Wow. Okay. Well, that makes sense too. I mean, I love this idea that we're just a chemical factory on, you know, walking around, and depending on what we're putting into the factory is what we're getting out.
And I know a lot of people might not tolerate fresh tomatoes, but they can eat things like ketchup or tomato sauce that have been cooked.
Now, that's true. I hadn't thought about that. I don't notice huge reactions, but I do tend to stay away from tomatoes. I do notice some inflammation. But you're right. I can eat marinara sauce without a problem. And the other thing I can eat, which is interesting, is sun-dried tomatoes. So this is making so much more sense.
It's a chemical reaction when you change the state.
Hmm. Let's take a quick commercial break. And when we come back, we're going to talk to Elizabeth because something just popped into my mind about this whole idea of fats. I know I've been reading a lot about, you know, olives and we're supposed to stay away from fats, but now we can have them. So Elizabeth, we're going to talk about that, but let's take this quick commercial break just a tad early and then we'll get back to that.
Life Interrupted Radio will return after these messages from our sponsors. It's great sponsors like these that keep this show coming to you every week. Be sure and stop by lifeinterruptedradio.com to learn more.
Hi, this is Sharon, and of course you know me from here on the Autoimmune Hour, but maybe you didn't know I'm also an author, mostly nonfiction. But recently I delved into the world of children's fiction with the Pinky Chenille series. If you haven't had a chance to check out Pinky Chenille and the Rainbow Hunters, go over and check it out at pinkychenille.com. That's Pinky, P-I-N-K-Y, Chenille, C-H-E-N-I-L-L-E.com. Thanks. See you there.
This episode is brought to you by mindfulnessinactionbook.com. To get your free 4-minute guided meditation to relax, refresh, and renew in just 4 minutes, and who doesn't have 4 minutes? Stop by mindfulnessinactionbook.com now. This guided meditation is in handy MP3 format, so you can use it anywhere, anytime. Download it now at mindfulnessinactionbook.com.
Do you want to be a better leader, have better relationships, become more self-aware, be a better communicator? Hi, I'm Sharon Saylor, best-selling author, professional speaker, and executive coach. And my life passion is empowering professionals to be the best that they can be. After years of working with professionals, I've discovered the 7 things nobody is telling you that can cost you your clients, sales, and even your career. And I want to give it to you free. You've heard my show, you know my passion, and maybe we'll be working together sooner rather than later. So go grab this ebook now to find out the 7 things that's costing you big time over at SharonSaylor.com/radio gift. Welcome back, everyone, to the Autoimmune Hour, Surviving to Thriving with Sharon Saylor. And we're here with Elizabeth Yarnell, and she is just a master of understanding nutrition and food and what it does to our body. She is the author of The Glorious One-Pot Meals, a revolutionary, quick, and healthy approach to Dutch oven cooking, as well as she is an MS Thriver. And she learned early on how food changed her body and what she could do to overcome the symptoms of MS. It's just awesome. She's a board-certified naturopath and designer of customized anti-inflammatory diets. And she runs a nationwide food therapy clinic to help us discover what are those things that are causing inflammation and get rid of them, and then to find foods that taste good and make us feel good too. So Elizabeth has just been sharing so many things. You probably notice if you're watching the video, my mouth is just hanging open in awe with some of the things she's been sharing. But one thing that I've been thinking about a lot lately that just has me confused, and now I know sugar is not a good thing and that there's a lot of sugar in everything, but all of a sudden I've been reading the past few months of news articles about fats are okay. Fats are okay. And my whole growing up life, you know, was like, stay away from fats. So what's it up with fats?
So isn't that funny? I was a teenager in the 80s, and the last thing that we would do is fats. So we used to think, oh, the healthiest thing that we could have, or the best thing for to keep our figure would be to have a dry bagel with no butter, right? Or to eat margarine instead of butter. So what we
margarine was big. Yep.
Margarine was so big. And really all of that popular knowledge or prescriptions for health came out of this set of studies that were commissioned by the CDC that were published in around 79 or 80, maybe even 81. And they were looking to correlate heart disease with saturated fat. And what the studies announced back in 1980 was that they found a correlation between saturated fats and heart disease. Well, just a couple years ago, the authors of that study came out and said that the study was flawed and that actually saturated fats don't cause heart disease. So even when you see these big studies, and this was a huge movement, affected the food industry, it's what brought about canola oil, margarine, all of these things really came out of that. What we have learned in the meantime is that what we were substituting these saturated fats with are much, much worse than saturated fats, the trans fats. And those are the hydrogenated oils that forms margarine, all sorts of things. They were put into almost everything that was baked to increase their shelf life. And what we have been learning is that trans fats are really the worst possible things that you can put in your body in terms of fats. And saturated fats, as it turns out, are needed for good health, that they help your organs, cushion your organs, they help your body have strong nails and strong hair, they transport nutrients that are fat soluble and you can't transport them without the fats there. And in fact, as I was saying before, I'm very much a believer in whole foods. So I believe that, say, whole milk is much better choice than skim milk. I believe that whenever you have an option for the whole fat versus a reduced fat, then you should take that one. And in fact, if you see a label that says low fat, no fat, you should run away because you don't know what they have put in to replace that flavor, that mouthfeel of fat. And it's usually something much worse that is chemically made.
Oh, wow. Now, I just want to get your little opinion here, although this, we're not saying that you just should go shove fat in your mouth, like don't go eat like a pound of butter, right? I mean, all things in moderation here.
Right. Well, to an extent, right. Moderation doesn't work if you're sensitive to it, right?
But true. Thank you. But I meant like eating, we're not just saying, okay, it's open season on fat.
Right. So things like the Atkins diet really said open season on fat, right? They said, oh, go eat like 12 pieces of bacon. And I remember my uncle was on the Atkins diet and he would eat 12 hot dogs in a sitting, but no buns because he was on the Atkins. And that is not a healthy way either. We need to have balance, but when you choose fats, you should choose whole fats. And butter is a way better choice than margarine. And we shouldn't deny ourselves these things because they've been demonized by the trans fat industry and by that flawed group of studies that were submitted to the CDC back in the 80s, a long time ago. And we should just really focus on eating whole foods rather than foods that are just pieces of foods.
Now, some of the fats we've been talking about, like butter and bacon, things like that. What about, I'll say, the plant-based fats like avocado, coconut? I'm missing some. But what about the plant-based things that I've been told, you know, like an avocado, that's fattier than an apple? What about those kinds of fats?
So back in the 80s, I learned that avocados had high fat, so I stayed away from them.
But, yeah, me too.
Right. Which is stupid because avocados are just one of nature's most perfect foods. They were one of the first foods I fed my babies. They're really essential and valuable, especially for people with autoimmune issues like multiple sclerosis, where you have a degenerative nervous system disease, because the fats in avocado, the unsaturated fats, help rebuild and repair nerves. So you really need those kinds of fats. I think most MS patients, if I'm going to give a broad-based suggestion, should eat an avocado a day. Now, I can't eat avocados because when I tested my food sensitivity testing, avocados came up reactive for me, which makes me very, very sad. But most people, I think, benefit from eating really an avocado a day.
Now, here again, I want to just, with these, this is like a global thing. If you find that an avocado is giving, you know, make it, all of a sudden you're starting to eat it and your toe starts hurting, get tested.
Or your balance starts going off or you start having some tingling. But again, it's so, so hard to make those correlations without some guidance because of the amount of foods that you're eating all the time.
Oh, yeah. But another problem comes up for me, though, was a family, you know, and here you are cooking for yourself one particular way. I don't know about other families, but with the kids, and I end up cooking three or four meals for one meal.
And oh, I'm so sorry to hear that.
Let's talk about ways that we can.
Let's talk about this, because this is something with my patients in my food sensitivity clinic. I work with them pretty intensively for 4 to 6 hours over a couple of months. And this is one of the issues that we talk about, because when you have someone in the family who has a restrictive diet and who really needs to follow it for their health, but they're watching other people in the family eat foods that they are not allowed to have.
I'll tell you, smelling toast, even when I am traveling and you're in a hotel and you smell toast, that does it for me. So I'm sorry about that. But.
Oh, and I understand. The last time I had toast, I had that same feeling. I'm like, oh, I smell it. I was at a restaurant. I'm like, I'm going to have the toast. So I ate the toast and I thought, okay, well, I'm probably going to have some digestive upset, maybe some diarrhea later or something. But I didn't have any of that. Instead, I literally left the restaurant, went home, and got into bed for 6 hours.
Wow.
So that was how it affected me. And now I don't have so much desire for toast, but I also help people out with recipes that they can make for breads and muffins that they can toast that will be safe for them. Back to what you were saying about making numerous meals for your family. So when I talk to my patients, I tell them, I say, this is going to be a lot easier for you if you can get everyone in the family on board, at least for, say, 2 or 3 months, that they're going to agree to eat the same dinner that the person who needs the restrictive diet is eating. And it's not going to be something weird. It might be salmon and rice and broccoli. So it's not going to be weird food. It's just going to be more limited food. And then when they're out of the house, they can eat whatever they want, whatever they're used to eating. But in the house, they need to eat the same things. And then the other thing that makes it a lot easier is my cookbook. So my cookbook is designed, and this was before I even knew about food sensitivities, but it's designed so that every single item is substitutable. So when you look at a recipe, let's say it's a recipe for, Fiesta steak. So if you wanted to, if you didn't want to use steak or if steak was inflammatory for you, you could make it Fiesta chicken or you can make it Fiesta salmon. You can swap any protein for any protein. Now, in this recipe for Fiesta steak, there are several different colors of bell peppers. Now, let's say you're avoiding nightshades or you can eat bell peppers. That's fine. So you put in broccoli instead, or you add some carrots, or you put in some squash, whatever it is that you are not sensitive to, you just substitute it in and it still comes out delicious. And you still have kind of the same idea with the flavorings. It's just a safer version for you. And my cookbook, my cooking method is so easy because you literally just cut it all up, throw it in the Dutch oven, throw it inside your oven at a super, super high heat, 450 degrees, and it flash cooks in 45 minutes and it doesn't matter what's in it. It all cooks at the same temperature for the same amount of time. And you can even do that with frozen foods too.
Oh, that's so great. Let's talk about frozen foods for a minute. I mean, gosh, I was raised on TV dinners and canned food. So that's going back a while, obviously. But at the time, I think about it, you know, at the time, my family, my mom was doing what she was told was best. And at the time that, as we were talking about, the margarines and things. I'm curious about the different methods. I know I prefer, whenever I can get it, to get fresh, going to farmer's market as fresh as possible. But if that's not available for whatever reason, are frozen foods of equal or similar quality?
Sometimes, actually, frozen foods can be more nutritious because they are frozen, flash frozen at the peak of their freshness, as soon as they're picked. They haven't been traveling for 6 days to get to the supermarket and for you to get them. So they haven't lost a lot of nutrients along the way. And then you want to look and make sure that the brand of frozen foods that you're getting is clean, something like Cascadian Farms or another organic one, and that they're not adding a bunch of additives, that it's just that vegetable or that fruit or whatever it is. So in my house, I like to keep a lot of frozen foods around because it makes it easier for me to get a meal on the table, even if I haven't been to the grocery store recently. So I love, we keep our freezer stocked with beef patties, with boneless skinless chicken breasts, with seafood, with fish fillets, all kinds of frozen proteins, as well as frozen vegetables. And then I can literally dump them into my cast iron Dutch oven, and I can mix in any fresh vegetables I might have or any other ingredients, and it still will only take 45 minutes to cook.
Oh, that's awesome. But I'm of a generation where my grandmother had a Dutch oven, so I know what it is. You mentioned a cast iron Dutch oven, which I actually have my grandmother's here. I keep it sort of as a shrine, though, but I'm going to pull it out. And so let's describe, what is a Dutch oven so people know?
So a Dutch oven is, let me pull my little one up right here. I just have a little itty bitty one here. Can you see that?
Yeah.
So it is, this one is porcelain, but it's a cast iron. It's a pot like this, and it has, usually has handles, but this is cast iron, and it has a cast iron lid as well. So that allows you want the base to be flat, not concave or convex. And that allows the cast iron, which has unique heating properties as this type of metal, to really allow the heat to diffuse all throughout the food. And when you put it into the oven, it cooks from all sides in a very unique way. It doesn't work the same if you have a glass casserole dish or porcelain, anything like that. So you really want it to be cast iron. A cast iron Dutch oven has a little bit like that.
Yeah. Now, so, and for those of you listening on audio, it's a deep pot with handles, probably several quarts, and it's got a nice solid cast iron lid as well. And they're still readily available. If you don't find it in like the cooking, go to the camping section. That's where I usually find them. So if you don't find it in like a, you know, your department store's cooking section, go to the camping section. You might find it there.
Yep. In fact, the camping ones are usually uncoated cast iron, so you then have to season them and treat them carefully. No soap, no scrubby brushes, things like that on uncoated or seasoned cast iron. But Le Creuset, for example, and Lodge Cookware, there's a lot of companies that make enamel coated cast iron, which is much easier. It's dishwasher safe. So much easier to clean, it won't rust on you, and it's usually lighter weight. It allows the cast iron core to be not quite so heavy. And in fact, my cookbook, which is based on recipes for two people, uses a 2-quart cast iron Dutch oven, but can easily be increased for a larger group. And so most families will want, if you have a family of four, you'd want like a 4.5-quart or a 5-quart cast iron Dutch oven. And those actually are pretty easy to find in places like Sur La Table, even Macy's, and those one day Macy's sales, they have great sales on their 5-quart cast irons, and they have 3 quarts as well. Martha Stewart has a line, Rachel Ray has a line, Mario Batali has a line. So they're becoming more popular. I think they're the must-have essential piece of cookware for every kitchen.
Awesome. You know, they did go out of fashion for a while, because I'm thinking my grandmother had one all the time. My mother never used it. So, you know, it did go out of fashion for a while. It's great to hear that they're enamel coated. I'll have to go check that out, because that was one reason mine is got this lovely little place where I remember the Dutch oven.
But so heavy.
It's so heavy, and it's a lot of upkeep.
Because it'll rust very easily.
Yeah.
Yes. Where you live.
Oh my gosh. Oh, that's great to know they're enamel coated, and those work equally as well. That's awesome.
Yes.
We need to take one quick commercial break. And when we come back, we're going to learn more about how to cook these quick and easy meals, as well as more about anti-inflammatory diets and how to get more information about Elizabeth's work and her book. We'll be right back.
Life Interrupted Radio will return after these messages from our sponsors. It's great sponsors like these that keep this show coming to you every week. Be sure and stop by lifeinterruptedradio.com to learn more.
Hi, this is Sharon, and of course you know me from here on the Autoimmune Hour, but maybe you didn't know I'm also an author, mostly nonfiction. But recently I delved into the world of children's fiction with the Pinky Chenille series. If you haven't had a chance to check out Pinky Chenille and the Rainbow Hunters, go over and check it out at pinkychenille.com. That's Pinky, P-I-N-K-Y, Chenille, C-H-E-N-I-L-L-E.com. Thanks. See you there.
Research shows we apologize up to 10 times a day, and most of the time, we say sorry as a response to someone else's mistake. What if we thanked people instead of all that unnecessary apologizing? So instead of saying, "Sorry, I'm rambling," you say, "Thank you for listening." Join us at ProjectForgive.com, a free non-religious resource on global forgiveness.
Do you want to be a better leader, have better relationships, become more self-aware, be a better communicator? Hi, I'm Sharon Saylor, best-selling author, professional speaker, and executive coach. And my life passion is empowering professionals to be the best that they can be. After years of working with professionals, I've discovered the 7 things nobody is telling you that can cost you your clients, sales, and even your career. And I want to give it to you free. You've heard my show, you know my passion, and maybe we'll be working together sooner rather than later. So go grab this ebook now to find out the 7 things that's costing you big time over at SharonSaylor.com/radio gift. Welcome back, everyone, to the Autoimmune Hour, Surviving to Thriving. And we're here with Elizabeth Yarnell, and she has just been sharing amazing information with us about food and how food can help us heal, absolutely, as well as quick and easy ways to do food. Because as busy parents, I know a lot of times it's not that easy. We think of food and we're like, oh, just one more chore. And she's been sharing her glorious one-pot meals with us. And we were talking right before the break about cast iron. And she shared with us some new types of cast iron, which is awesome. Sounds like a lot less work than what I remember cast iron as being. She also has a wonderful natural lifestyle blog called Effortless Eating for Healthier Bodies. And we'll get into it. We're just in the last 12 minutes, but we want to get into her TED Talk. We are what we eat, poisons in our everyday food. And I'm just like, oh my gosh. So I'll just let you run with any of that there, Elizabeth, because tell us about this, what we are, what we eat. I think we've been talking about that at a great length, but effortless eating for healthier bodies too. Effortless. I like that word.
Oh, thank you. I started my blog in 2008, and it's really a healthy eating and natural lifestyle blog. I talk about recipes, I talk about ingredients, I talk about different products that come out that are healthy, both for eating and for using like skincare, things like that. And then I talk about a lot of different ways that you can avoid chemicals in your life and basically all sorts of stuff for living a healthy lifestyle. In a natural way. I'm all about no pharmaceuticals, no chemicals.
Right. We had Sharon McGrill on, maybe 2 or 3 months ago now, talking about cleaning products. And I was so shocked at not just cleaning products around the home, but personal cleaning products, and started reading the backs of labels. And I have to tell you, I had no idea there were like just maybe a lotion or something. You read the back of the label, there's a good 20 products. It's not just lotion. It's like 20 things you can't pronounce in there.
Right. So the problem is in our lives is that there's all these chemicals out, and maybe the FDA has said they're safe. And that doesn't mean there's been testing, because if you know anything about the approval process for the FDA, it's basically self-submitted, saying, oh yeah, well, we think this is safe. And a lot of items fall under what's called GRAS, generally recognized as safe, which means they don't even need testing. So
that's scary. Generally recognized as safe.
Safe. GRAS.
<G-R-A-S. like> that. That's not a very reassuring phrase.
Right. It's very scary. And maybe those things are okay for most people most of the time. But what nobody is talking about is the amount that we are now encountering in our lives, how many chemicals and toxins are coming into our world. So for instance, let's talk about something like red food dye. So red food dye was first introduced to the FDA in 1931, and at that time it was sourced from charcoal. And now it is sourced from petroleum, and it's really never been significantly tested over the long period as safe for humans. And even if it has, it's been tested in very minute amounts. But if you think about all the places that, say, a 12-year-old kid is encountering red food dye today, well, it might be in their breakfast cereal, might be in their soda pop, it might be in their ketchup, it might be in their vitamin, their gummy vitamin that they're getting in the morning. It might be in their, of course, like in something like licorice that they're having as a snack after school. It might be in the cheesy crackers that they're eating. It's going to be in so many more places, not even including in their shampoo, in their conditioner, in our laundry detergent. Why are we coloring laundry detergents? That makes me completely irate. Like, I don't understand. We're putting this to wash our clothes, yet it's blue. The same with our dishwashing liquid. Like, why is dishwashing liquid green? Why? It doesn't need to be. That's an added food coloring. And every time you wash your dishes with your hands, now you are exposing your skin to more food dyes and more toxins. And it's absorbing, even if you don't feel like it's very long and you're washing it off, but it's still being absorbed. And our skin is our largest organ, so we can't forget about that. And in order to increase their distribution, they have an added preservatives. So they are everywhere. And with my patients, we talk a lot about that, about you need to look at your makeup, you need to look at your facial wash, you need to look at anything, your lotion, anything you're putting on your skin, as well as everything you're putting on your body.
Well, and I'm also curious, so we're talking about just one particular preservative or a dye, let's say, but obviously if they are just generally recognized as safe, they haven't looked at the interchange of, let's say, that dye and that preservative and maybe something
together,
a stabilizer, or what chemical does that make as together? Because you were commenting on the difference between a solid cheese and a melted cheese, I'm thinking, oh my gosh, if I've got, I'm using maybe four different products, makeup products on my face, let's say. I'm just kind of sitting here going, oh my gosh, how do those different products react together, making, if you add those chemicals together, does it make some other chemical that's maybe even more noxious? I don't know. This is just, oh my gosh, this can be just overwhelming when you start to think about it.
It is very overwhelming. And when you start reading the labels on your personal care products, as well as on your food, then you really get a sense of how widespread this industry has become. And it's in everything.
This might be a bit of a rabbit hole and far afield, but I find the biggest trouble I have, because in my home, I've learned to stabilize things. This is what I get. This is what I can tolerate. But I travel a lot, like you. We travel a lot. When I travel, oftentimes, I walk into a hotel room, and I'm like, I need a different room. The cleaning products are just, the smell is overwhelming, and I just feel it. If I slept here, I would wake up in a really bad state. Have you found anything that helps you travel? I find that even going on an airplane or sometimes even those chemicals can be overwhelming to me.
It's true. The more that you can lead an uninflamed life, the higher your tolerance threshold is going to become. So I know I have a patient, and when she's in a bad place, when she's constantly inflamed, she can't tolerate somebody in the room with perfume on. And then she'll have a migraine. So, but if she's in a better place where her inflammation load is lower, then she has a little more room in her bucket to tolerate that perfume from somebody else. So are there any tricks? The one trick that I tend to do quite frequently, especially when I travel, is a sinus rinse. I like the Neomed sinus rinse. And it comes with these pre-measured little packets that have sodium and baking soda in it, basically salt and baking soda, and you clean out your nostrils, and that really will flush out a lot of those particles, those aroma molecules that have been trapped in your nose hairs, and it will flush them out and can help keep you cleaner internally.
Oh, great tip. Great tip. Because I do find that there are times when I can tolerate certain smells. And I was always curious if it was that particular smell or something else. But it's probably just how my system, the state of my system at the time, more than that particular item going on.
Wow. Well, it's pretty toxic. I mean, you can even just, if I just mention the word Clorox, I'm sure that there's a smell memory that you have immediately. Because...
Yeah, people, I think everybody can think of bleach.
Right?
Or right? You mentioned the word ammonia or vinegar. You automatically get that sensation.
Right.
Isn't that interesting how the body remembers that sensation, even if you're not exposed to, because vinegar is a real strong one for me.
Right. And aromas, even though they're invisible, are still molecules. They exist in the air. And if we had a microscope that we could see the air around us, we'd see there's tons of molecules everywhere, all around us, all the time. So you want to try not to inhale. So one of my big pet peeves is dryer sheets, because they're just these toxin chemical soaked things that you put in and you put in your clothes. And then tension is then you take your clothes out of the dryer and you go, oh.
We've all seen those commercials.
Right?
Yes. We're on.
You bring that those aroma molecules all the way down to the little areoli in your lungs where they can get trapped and cause problems. And those are terribly toxic chemicals. So I always advocate just do not use dryer sheets at all. You should use natural-based laundry detergent like Ecos or Seventh Generation or something like that, that doesn't have artificial smells and artificial colors. And
the other thing about dryer sheets that I learned, but they're coated with something and it coats everything that you use. For a time, I would go visit a friend that used them on their towels, and I could never like get my glasses clean. And then I realized it was this coating was on their towels, was then coming off on my glasses when I was trying to keep my glasses clean. It's just amazing how many things we're exposed to these days. So, well, we're just down to the last few minutes, Elizabeth. This has been awesome. We'll have to have you back. We could just go down multiple rabbit holes with your vast knowledge of wisdom here. Thank you so much. Tell us more about your book, The Glorious One Pot Meals, as well as all of the amazing work that you're doing and how we can get a hold of you.
So Glorious One Pot Meals was, I first self-published it in 2005, and then I sold it to Random House, and they published it in 2009. So as we talked about a little bit at the beginning of the hour, we are coming up on our 10-year anniversary, which is so exciting.
Congratulations.
Thank you. So we've had over 60,000 home cooks learn how to cook this way so far, and it's very exciting to me to really help so many people eat healthier meals on a more regular basis in their lives. So I'm hoping to do a lot for that 10-year anniversary in 2019. Everything that I do is always on my website at elizabethyarnell.com. That's YARNELL.com. And that's where you can learn more about food sensitivities. You can see my blog, Effortless Eating. I'm on Twitter. I'm on Facebook. I don't really Instagram. Haven't really gotten into that one. But I'm active on a lot of different places. Got lots of videos on YouTube, lots of cooking demonstrations. I go all around the country and I talk about healthy eating and healthy cooking. I'm always available to do that for a lot of people. And I even have an ebook called Recipes for Living a Robust Life with Multiple Sclerosis. I think something like that. So in it gives a lot of tips and tricks for cleaning up your life in general. So as we talked about earlier, that I don't like to give across the board recommendations for food, but I feel very comfortable giving across the board recommendations for reducing toxins in your life.
Oh, thank you so much, Elizabeth. And we'll have elizabethyarnell.com up over at Understanding Autoimmune. So if you're driving or whatever, didn't have a chance to write down the spelling of her name, just pop over to Understanding Autoimmune. You'll be able to see all of her information there, as well as listen to the audio and see the video of the show. And thank you so much for being a guest. And one thing about her gift that she has, her ebook, what I have found with, it's related to MS, yes, but I have found that oftentimes with autoimmune is autoimmune. A lot of the suggestions work across the board, not all of them, but I have found a major amount of suggestions for one type, whether it's MS, lupus, whatever it is, oftentimes the suggestions, give them a try, that, you know, let's see if they work for your particular autoimmune, because even though you have a label, a specific label, like my label's dermatomyositis, it's still autoimmune. And there's so many things that are a good recommendation for any kind of autoimmune. So thank you, Elizabeth, for being on the show. We'll have you back on that 10th anniversary to be sure and celebrate with you. And in the meantime, everyone, go get yourself Glorious One Pot Meals and go get yourself a Dutch oven and give it a try. Drop me some notes over at Facebook, Life Interrupted Radio, and let me know what you think. I'm going to be trying that myself. So anyway, stay tuned, everyone. Thank you, Elizabeth. Everyone, have a great weekend, whatever your adventures. Join me next week for another episode. Oh, and before I forget, pop over to understandingautoimmune.com and sign up for Transcribe Tribe. Be sure and go over there. Almost all the transcripts are up. Elizabeth will be there as well. And that's always a fun way that if you don't have time to listen to the show again, but you said, what was it that Elizabeth said? You can just quickly scan the transcript and find it there as well. So be sure and go over to Understanding Autoimmune and sign up for that. As well as join us on Instagram, on Facebook, on Twitter. And I think that's it. Everyone, join me next week. Enjoy.
The information provided on lifeinterruptedradio.com is for educational purposes only. What you hear, read, and see on Life Interrupted Radio is based on experience only. The information presented here should never be used for any legal, diagnostic, or treatment purposes. Always seek sound legal, medical, and or professional advice regarding any problems, conditions, and any of the recommendations you see, hear, or read here on Life Interrupted Radio. You've been listening to Life Interrupted Radio. To learn more, listen to other shows, and gain free resources that can help empower your life, be sure to stop by lifeinterruptedradio.com. This episode is brought to you by mindfulnessinactionbook.com. To get your free 4-minute guided meditation to relax, refresh, and renew in just 4 minutes, and who doesn't have 4 minutes? Stop by mindfulnessinactionbook.com now. This guided meditation is in handy MP3 format, so you can use it anywhere, anytime. Download it now at mindfulnessinactionbook.com.
Do you want to be a better leader, have better relationships, become more self-aware, be a better communicator? Hi, I'm Sharon Saylor, best-selling author, professional speaker, and executive coach. And my life passion is empowering professionals to be the best that they can be. After years of working with professionals, I've discovered the 7 things nobody is telling you that can cost you your clients, sales, and even your career. And I want to give it to you free. You've heard my show, you know my passion, and maybe we'll be working together sooner rather than later. So go grab this ebook now to find out the 7 things that's costing you big time over at SharonSaylor.com/radio gift.